Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors, a clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. Oh, yes, indeed. Good morning and hello, and I bid you thrice welcome to Georgie Jameson, who's here to do a special rebrand strand, if you like, because she's got an extraordinary story to tell, having been part of the fabric of BBC Radio Suffolk for the last nearly 10 years. Yeah. And then all has changed as of July of this year. So this is going to be a really lovely conversation about how you've tilted and adapted and what you're doing now, because you're going back to your roots as a writer, broadcaster, radio documentary maker. Really enjoyed researching you as well. You're a comedy historian. And my all-time comic hero, by the way, is Stan Laurel. And, you know, I know that you've done programmes pertaining to Roy Hudd, Les Dawson, Dick Emery, yes. All wonderful comic gold. Mm. So there'll be lots of lovely stuff to talk about. But Georgie Jameson, you're very welcome. Hello.
Thank you. Thank you for asking me. I'm very honoured. You mentioned comedy historian there. It always makes me laugh because my husband always says it's a made-up job.
Yes, but someone's got to chronicle it all, and what a great made-up job. So you were passed the golden baton, which is a construct within the show, by the lovely James Hogg, or Hoggers, as Hoggers. You like to call him. And he has written the books about Brian Blessed, and you know he's just finished writing one about Timothy West as well, which has just been published in the last week or so. So yes, I'm delighted to have you here, and it's my great pleasure and privilege to curate you through the journey of The Good Listening To Show, where there's going to be a clearing, a tree. We're going to shake your tree to see which storytelling apples fall out. Then you'll have thought about your answers to the construct 5-4-3-2-1. There's a couple of random squirrels, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, a golden baton, and a cake. So it's all to play for.
Yes.
So first of all, what's your story of the day? I know that you've just had a big sort of career shift in that you were part of BBC Suffolk, but just, do you want to just give us the quick backstory of you know, how we met? And, you know, because I got in touch with you when you were still at BBC Radio Suffolk.
Yes. Hoggers passed the golden baton on to me. I've known him, probably about 12 years now. And it was comedy that brought us together. And it was Twitter that brought us together, actually. He had just published a book on Ernie Wise, and I'm a huge Morecambe and Wise fan. Yes. And I was given this book for Christmas, and then I discovered him on Twitter and we got chatting, and now we've been kind of best mates for years. And I helped in a very small way on the Kenny Everett book that he worked on. I did some social media for him. And very kindly got a credit in the back of the book, which I was thrilled about. Yes. And now he and I and a lady called Steph Hurst, who is a broadcasting legend, are going to be working on a podcast celebrating Kenny Everett and his life and work and his genius and his technical genius as well as his comedy genius. And I've worked in radio the last 9 or 10 years, although previous to that, I was a contributor at BBC Radio Suffolk, so with local radio. I would do showbiz news and I would do paper reviews. And so I was often a guest. And yes. Then I was made redundant from a proper job in the travel industry. I worked for a cruise line company for nearly 14 years and got to do some traveling with them. And was made redundant and had a complete career shift in my early 40s. Started a business where I did social media and PR. And this was in the early days of social media for companies.
Yes.
You know, that lots of companies hadn't caught on at that point to the power of social media for their brand and their business. So it was very, very early days of that. And then I started doing more and more stuff with BBC Local Radio, and they took me on in paid roles doing travel news. I started on travel news on the breakfast show.
A lot of the
show.
Greats did start at that as well. Yeah. Carol, famously on BBC Radio 2. There's always people like that. And by the way, I'm very struck with the fact that this isn't your first rodeo, having been made redundant, if you like, because of course...
No, this is my third redundancy.
Yes.
I was made redundant from retail, then from travel, and then this July, with the huge seismic changes that have happened in BBC Local Radio and are happening across the country, the rollout is going. We were the first region in the East and the South. Yes. Hence, I was made redundant in July. But there were a lot of goodbyes this weekend to late shows and Sunday evening shows.
And yes, and by the way, I'm supremely aware they weren't singling you out for special attention. Absolutely not.
There are a lot of us.
A complete transformation of the way BBC procure and supply, I suppose, local radio provision and coverage.
Oh, absolutely. And that continues. And there are other regions that it hasn't affected yet. And as it affects each region and each area of the country notices and the kind of the swell of, oh, what on earth is happening is building. But we were the first region to go, so I went back in July. I hope to return as a freelancer when I can, which will be later this year. But in this sort of interim period, this 3 months, I thought I would explore some other things. I would go back to writing, which I did when I had my business back in 2014 or so, I think it was, or 2011, actually. Writing for the British Comedy Guide. I'm writing articles about British comedy, so retrospectives. And the other day, I picked my son up from school and he said, "What have you done today, Mummy?" And I said, "Oh, I've written 2,000 words on Open All Hours." I just thought, that's the most ridiculous way to earn a living, but it's so me. So me.
You took a deep dive into Ronnie Barker land. I love that.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world and hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And event hosting as well. We have a fantastic, because one of the big things I did on BBC Local Radio, and I did that across Suffolk and Norfolk, was I was an arts and theatre broadcaster. I had my own show on a Monday evening where I specialised in talking about theatre, because I have a theatre background. I was in local amateur theatre for about 30 years and I acted. And I've written pantomimes and I'm a great lover of theatre. And so this programme where I got to broadcast, which I love, and talk about theatre, which I love, was just wonderful for me. And there is such a fantastic theatre and art scene on the East Coast. And so I've tapped into that. And it's not just theatre, it's literature as well. We have a lot of writers, we have a lot of artists who come here because the light is so beautiful on the East Coast, in Suffolk and Norfolk, and they're attracted to that. So, yeah, all these wonderful hosting opportunities where I get to celebrate arts and theatre on the East Coast. So, and they very kindly pay me. And so this is what I'm doing. And so I'm thoroughly enjoying.
It's a delightful rebranding in a way, because you're obviously supremely aware there have been many, many transferable skills of the huge experience of being broadcasting as a regular fixture for 11 years. Yeah. And of course, that must have given you a bit of, you know, fame within the local community to then be the go-to person.
Yeah. You know, there are some people that say, who on earth's that? And there are other people who still want a selfie.
I heard a comedy story just this weekend where apparently Bill Bailey answered the door to somebody who's delivering a parcel, and the person said, can I have a photo? And he posed for a selfie. He went, no, I meant the parcel. That was his... Hurrah!
So, I love that.
Let's get you on the open road then. Mm. Thank you for positioning. And also, I'm so delighted that as we've identified, it's not your first, second or third rodeo. You've been there before. And what's fascinating is how you know to dig into your big arsenal of skills in order to come up with what's next.
You have to shake it off. It's like a grief redundancy. It is. It's awful. And each one has got slightly worse and slightly easier. Because each time I've been made redundant, it's from a job I loved more and more, and a profession that I've loved more and more. But the actual process of, we've done that now. What do I do next? How do I reinvent myself? How do I earn a living still doing things that I love has got slightly easier to rebrand myself. Yeah.
But
it is like a grief. It's awful.
Yes. And I love the irony of open all hours. Actually, you're open all hours, you're available, and you've gone there, and you're digging into skills you already have to go swimming back to what you love, which is great.
This is it.
And that'll be a very a great sucker to others listening as well about what to do when you hit that sort of wall of, you know, redundancy.
I hope so. Yeah, you have to just sort of, I find lists very, very useful. I made a lot of lists, and I sort of wrote how I felt and what I wanted to do and what I didn't want to do. And I thought, these are the things I want still out of life, but these are the things I don't want to go back to. I knew I couldn't go back to just a normal 9 to 5, you know, stuck at the desk where I wasn't allowed to be free and creative. And so, it's as important to think, right, what don't I want as what I do want, if you have something like a redundancy, because it's a huge hit. Mm. Your self-confidence as well. Mm. Really is. It can be.
And we'll maybe cover off more about that as we go through, but let's get going. So
let's get going.
The clearing. Where do you go? A clearing is your serious happy place. So where does Geordie Jamieson go to get clutter-free, inspirational and able to think? Where is your clearing?
Well, I mentioned being on the East Coast. It is the sea. I've never lived anywhere else but Suffolk. I've lived in various places in Suffolk, but I've never lived anywhere else. And therefore, I've always been on the eastern side of the region. I've never lived further than about 30 minutes away from the sea. And so that is where I would go. Just that sound of the waves. I'm not a sun seeker. It's not a beachy thing. It's more that that sound of the water and the waves. And that feeling of expanse. What I was saying about light, the beautiful light and sky that you get over the sea. And so it's something very soothing about that sound of the sea. It helps me clear my head.
And as this is your geography, do you want to be very specific about the seascape that you'd like to position us at? Because I'm about to arrive with a tree in your clearing. So
Well, we'll stick a tree on Felixstowe Beach then, shall we?
I love that. You don't have to be specific, but that is specific. Lovely. So here we are.
Yeah, we are on Felixstowe Beach.
Lovely. With the light of Suffolk in all its glory. That's wonderful. Yeah. So now I'm going to arrive with a tree in your clearing. And this is a bit Waiting for Godot-esque existentially. I'm going to shake a tree to see which storytelling apples fall out. How'd you like these apples. I've got various comedy props that will come out. So this has been your response to a lovely storytelling construct, which is called 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We've had 5 minutes to have thought about 4 things that have shaped you.
Yes.
3 things that inspire you, 2 things that never fail to grab your attention, and that's the oh, squirrels moment, and then a quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us. So over to you to interpret the shaking of your canopy as you see fit.
I used my 5 minutes. The 4 things that have shaped me. Number one is 10 years in retail. I think everyone should do it. I don't think you can do it forever. I think there is a finite amount of time before you want to kill the general public. But there is a lot to be said for even the comedy value of working in retail, particularly over Christmas as well. So I worked, I first left school, I wanted to be an actress and I was struggling to get into drama school, which I never did. Not because I couldn't act, but because they rightly identified that I didn't have the personality to cope with the rejection and the how hard it was going to be. And they could identify that in me as an 18-year-old. And I couldn't see it myself until much later in life. I thought, yeah, you were right. So I was just working in Marks and Spencer's. I say just, it's a perfectly respectable thing to do. And then when I realized things weren't going to happen for me, I went along Ipswich High Street and I ended up in now defunct Debenhams. But I was a children's portrait photographer.
Whoa.
For many years.
That's a great fact.
And so I spent, and it was the early 1990s when Ed the Duck from the broom cupboard at BBC, Children's BBC.
Yeah.
We had an Ed the Duck puppet. So I would have the clicker in one hand and this blooming duck, and it would quack to try and get the baby's attention. And so, I mean, it was everything from babies to small children, family groups. We did a pet promotion once, but we weren't really allowed to have animals in the store. So as the sort of young apprentice learning how to do this, I was the one that had to be sent down the back stairs to go and collect people and their dogs and their cats and so forth. And we were very close to the main offices. So to try and disguise the fact that there were dogs in the store, every time they barked, they had to cough. people brought ferrets. There were ferrets once. And we had a little enclosed wooden studio, but it didn't have a roof. So these ferrets were climbing up the wall. We had to try and keep these ferrets in.
So someone brought a
budgie in the cage, and the way that the camera was, you could either get the budgie in focus or the bars, but not both.
Yeah, so that's quite a choice. Shall we go budgie or bars, please? And I'm assuming
budgie or bars. So, it really does shape you. I mean, if you can deal with the public in that way and you see all sorts of human life, I mean, you see people who are very polite and also very kind, and they love their photographs and would say, thank you so much. You've made the family look lovely. These are Christmas presents for everyone. Or people who... I had pictures with we would put them in mock frames to display them when people came to see them. I had them thrown at me.
Oh, wow.
These are horrible. And they actually took them off the sort of Velcro and threw them at me.
And well, I threw was the photos because the they didn't like the photos.
Because they didn't like them.
Wow.
I was bitten on the back of the hand by a child.
If it had been the ferret, I'd have understood it, but it was a child that bit you. Okay.
I was regularly weed on and thrown up on.
That's a great way to learn your craft. and brilliant flagships institutions of M&S and Debenhams. Those are great flagship stores that you cut your teeth on.
So, I have to say, none of that happened at M&S. But, yes, this was all for a company, I think, now long called Parasol Portraits. And so in my early 20s, I did 10 years in retail and never want to go back, but I feel like I've done it now. And there's a lot of, I should really write a sitcom about a department store, because there's a lot of stuff up there that happened. that was very funny.
As opposed to are you being served, it's are you being photographed or are you weeing on my leg or whatever it might be.
But yeah, it certainly shapes you. It certainly shapes you.
So
yes.
That's a great first shapeage. So second thing that shaped you?
Becoming a mum. It was much longed for and a long journey. But eventually, just before my 40th birthday, I had my son, Taylor. And he is amazing.
And by the way, I'm very struck with that, much longed for. So there's obviously a rich story behind that. How long did you have to try for?
6 years.
Right. Yeah. That's very relatable because we took 8 years to have my daughter Lily naturally, and then my son is a one-off IVF miracle success 6 years after that. So I know a lot of people have a parallel universe in that regard.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm very happy that they're there. How lovely.
Yes, very, very. And I just have him. And you do get the inevitable, you know, why haven't you had me more? It's like, well, it took me 6 years to have him and I'm 40 now. So do you know what? We're just going to quit while we're ahead. Really, he's a miracle as far as I'm concerned. So that.
And by the way, forgive me, I'm not trying to age you. And this is not why I'm asking that. But how old is he now? I'm so sorry. I know
No, it's fine. No, I'm not into. I do laugh and say I should have a showbiz age because broadcasting doesn't look kindly on women over 50. I'm 53, so he's 13 and a half now. Uh-huh. It'll be 14 in February. And I'm an only child. He's an only child. I don't think there's a problem with that. Some people do, but I would much rather have him than say, well, I won't have any children because I can't have more than one. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense to me. But yeah, it was a massive change. And having the maternity leave was a massive change because I went from working full time to being at home for a year. Mm-hmm. And that was when I started a blog. And I started a mummy blog, which was all sort of rage at the time.
Yeah.
And that's how the writing started, because it got picked up by Mumsnet. It got picked up by Tesco's online magazine, and I did some writing for them because people like the style. They like the humour and the comedy of this is what happens when you're at home all day. I didn't realise how much the phone rang or people came to the door, because you're out, aren't you, normally all
yes.
day? And being at home with a baby there was a rich vein of comedy there, particularly when my son, who was about two, locked me out of the house when I took some rubbish out to the bin out the front, and we had to post the DHL man through the top window to rescue.
Another DHL man.
Yeah.
So I was going to say another top brand.
Luckily, he was tall and thin, and the neighbour got a little step ladder out, and we got him through this top window. And he did a somersault into my lounge. And obviously, I was petrified at the time because my son was inside. But then I wrote this incredibly comic blog about the whole ridiculous farce of the situation.
By the way, I love the comedy of the fact the DHL person, sorry to interrupt you, the comedy of the DHL person giving you your own parcel back, which is your baby, once he's opened the door from the
inside. Yes, I know. Luckily, he was delivering a parcel to us. So.
Half man, half ninja. I love that.
Yeah, came along at the right time. Yes, and then when I returned to work, I returned part-time, and this was to the cruise line company, and within 6 months, they'd made me redundant. So there I was, 41 with an 18-month-old baby and a almost 14-year career in travel.
Yes.
Gone. But honestly, I don't think I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now if it wasn't for becoming a mum. Because I seriously believe that was one of the reasons I got made redundant.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't really know what to do with me. And I think they thought I was going to have another baby very quickly. And so actually that redundancy and losing my job then was the massive turning point in my life. And it all happened because I eventually managed to become a mum. And then now I think it's the greatest thing that I do. I necessarily say I'm great at it, but it's the, if people ask me what I do, I say I'm a mum.
But again, it's another great testament to when in adversity, you know, when we look back, we can join the dots up backwards, and then something that felt catastrophic at the time, in the end, is thoroughly shaping and actually crafts your future. So that's, again, very relatable.
Yes, absolutely.
Third shapeage, or could be the fourth now?
It's my love of comedy and those formative years watching TV comedy and films, those carry-on films that would come on a bank holiday Monday. And
lovely.
Because it was all those that made me love it and wanted to research it and wanted to know more about it. And I put radio comedy in with that as well, because I didn't know much about radio comedy, but I knew I loved the carry-ons and I loved Kenneth Williams. And I just picked up a tape one day when I was at sixth form. I think I was shopping, or it might have even been at a car boot sale, but it was cheap, this tape, but it was Kenneth, it was Round the Horn. And there was Ken Williams on the front, and Hugh Pat, all these people that I knew, Bill Pertwee, and I thought, what's this? And then my dad said, oh, we used to listen to this every Sunday lunchtime, you'll love it. And I did. I thought it was marvellous. And then that led into a rabbit hole of Navy Lark and Hard Lines, which I then went on to write for in the early
Roy
2000s.
Hard, yes.
And
wow.
Yeah, with Roy Hard. And so, yes, just that little tape and recognising Kenny Williams.
You've been a staff writer as well on programmes like
Roy. Not a staff writer. I was an uncommissioned writer, but they used several of my, the last two series, they used several of my gags, one-liners, the Hard Lines.
Which
was a great thrill. But yeah, and again, I don't think I would have done that if I hadn't had that background of listening to all that radio comedy, because then I started buying all the Round the Horn tapes, the Julian and Sand tapes, the Navy Lark stuff, all Goons, you know, all that rich vein of radio comedy. And then, of course, things like Radio 4 Extra came along.
Yes.
It used to be Radio 7. And radio versions of Dad's Arnie or Steptoe or Yes Minister, all fabulous stuff. So yes, all that, if I hadn't watched all that TV comedy, I wouldn't have discovered the radio comedy later on. And then I wouldn't have probably become a comedy historian and started buying books and be given books for Christmas and birthdays about Morecambe and Wise or yes. Two Ronnies or whatever it was, and absorbing all this information and then starting to connect all the dots, particularly with the Carry On stars and 60s comedy. And it was like, oh, okay. So, and things like Ronnie Corbett, he was in the late night cabaret with Danny LaRue. Barry Cryer used to write for them. David Frost was in the audience one night, liked the stuff, brought Barry in as a writer, liked Ronnie, brought Ronnie into the Frost Report. That's how he met Ronnie Barker.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how we get the two Ronnie. And it's like this kind of massive family tree of comedy.
Yes.
And
as you say, a rabbit hole, but it keeps on giving.
Yeah. And that I love that. When you put it all together, it's like, oh, so Hattie was married to John Le Mesurier, but then he ended up marrying Joan, who had an affair with Hancock, and Hancock and John were great friends because they worked on Hancock together. And it's just like, whoa, this is amazing. And no wonder all these sort of dramas have been made about this time, like Fantabulosa with the wonderful Michael Sheen, and yes. Ruth Jones, who played Hattie so beautifully as well. Because the stories are so, it's not just the comedy.
Yes.
The stories, the backstories are so fascinating.
Yes.
I love them. And that all comes from just sitting around the TV together on a Saturday night and watching Two Ronnies or Morecambe and Wise or Dick Emery or whatever those big shows were at the time.
Yes.
And that's what sort of sparked my imagination.
Lovely shapages, if I may say so. So now we're on to three things that inspire you now. And if there's any overlap, don't worry, but three things that inspire you.
Yeah. Well, there is an overlap because my son inspires me. When he was about 3 and a half, and I can remember it to this day, I was called to one side as I was picking him up from nursery. And said, Mrs. Jameson, can I have a word? And they said, we think Kayla may be autistic. And I didn't really know what to do with that. And eventually we got the diagnosis just before his 6th birthday. And he is what they would now call high-functioning autism. Don't tend to use the expression Asperger's anymore. He is in mainstream school. He's verbal and makes eye contact, has a wonderful sense of humour. But he does struggle with some things. He struggles with some concepts. He struggles with some of his learning. He likes what he likes. He can't see the point of stuff he doesn't. And he teaches me every day because I don't think he realises how brilliant he is. And if I try and tell him, he's a grumpy teenager, so he just, oh, Mum, shut up, you're embarrassing. But
it's very profound because life is of itself a spectrum and everybody's different. You know, we're all individuals, as the joke goes. And of course, it's about embracing people's, you know, idiosyncratic difference that makes them the genius that they are because they're distinct.
Yeah. And I've learned so much about autism as well and how one size doesn't fit all. There are so many vast areas of that spectrum, and that's why it's so difficult to pin down. And we had a lot of people at the time say, oh, don't be daft, he's not autistic. I said, well, just because he's verbal, yeah, I think they expected Rain Man.
Yes, of course.
You know, or you'd get, what's his genius then? Is he brilliant at maths? No, he's not actually particularly. He really struggles with it. There's a lot of barriers still to be broken down about autism, and I get annoyed when people say, oh, he suffers with autism. He doesn't suffer and suffer at all. It's not, and I've had people well-meaningly but use really inflammatory language like, oh, so what's wrong with him? Oh, sorry to hear that he's handicapped.
Oh, blimey. Yes,
that's a word you I haven't heard for about 40-odd years,
yeah,
you know.
Absolutely.
That's not a PC word anymore, you know. Yes. And I feel bad even saying it out loud, but I'm using it in the context
of course,
if someone actually said it to me. And I have actually on occasion said, it's all right, you can't catch it. It's not catching. Yes. You know, there is nothing wrong with him. He is who he is. And he's brilliant. And he doesn't stop being my son just because he has a diagnosis. All that did was open up lots of help and support, actually. And I feel desperately sorry for people who are waiting years on a diagnosis, because sometimes until you have that label, you can't access any support. And actually, really, it would be lovely if there was some kind of support for that interim time, that time when you're in limbo, from that first noticing from a school or nursery to that diagnosis. That's the time when you are all at sea. That's the time when you could do with support. But because you don't have that piece of paper, there is no support. You can't tap into it. And really, that's when you could do with it. That's when you could do with someone to talk to and say, autism, ADHD, dyspraxia, a combination of all of them.
Yes.
You know, we even went down the route of, well, maybe he's not picking up things at school because he can't hear very well. We had hearing tests, you know, we had occupational therapy because often hypermobility comes hand in hand with autism. And he does get there, he's left-handed, he gets very tired writing and so therefore just gives up.
And the school were very present by the sound, but the school were very present. They were trying, because they gave you the first sort of
suspected. We've been incredibly lucky with that. There are others who aren't. And and there needs to, and I think that is probably because It is so vast, you know. And I still have friends and family now who say, oh, there's nothing wrong with it. I said, no, there isn't anything wrong with
it. That's the point.
It's not wrong. That's the point. It's not wrong to be autistic.
Yes.
He's just, you know. And it's made me look at me, made me look at myself and maybe some of my behaviours and things in my childhood and think maybe there's something there. And it doesn't get picked up in women as early as it does in boys and men. And any women that I know who are neurodivergent have pretty much all not had a diagnosis until at least their 30s, sometimes their 40s.
Yes.
Girls mask it, often academically because it doesn't get picked up because they're just trotting along quite nicely, doing well at school. And so they just go under the radar, but it gets picked up a lot later.
And the radar often presents when there's conformity, as I understand it. So when there's conformity and nothing sort of sticking above the parapet, metaphorically, it's then easy to keep under the surface.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's what happens. That's what happens. But I think he just teaches me stuff every day. He doesn't realise, but he does. Yeah, so he does inspire me great.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, Mum and Dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
This is a strange one, actually. It's a badge, and it's a badge that I wish I had it, but I can't find it. I had it on my BBC lanyard, and I took it off because I had to hand the lanyard in, and I didn't want to lose the badge. And it's a badge that I bought at a Joe Lycett gig. I love Joe Lycett, and I think he's an incredible person and comedian. And this was the basis of his most recent show, which was an amazing piece of work that took him over 4 years to kind of put together. And if you haven't seen it, I won't spoil it, although it has been on TV now. But the badge is sold through something called, I think it's Arts Emergency. And it says sometimes if you want something to exist, you have to make it yourself. And I bought that badge, and I bought it for a friend and sent it to him as well. And I weirdly pinned it to my BBC lanyard in a slightly, subversive way.
That's so inspirational for anyone in a creative endeavor. If you want something to exist, you have to make it yourself. Even me sitting here with the soundscape of my podcast, it's absolutely because I'm doing it myself.
You've made it yourself. And that kept me going through I mean, we were at risk of redundancy with the BBC from, Halloween, last Halloween, they told us. The irony was not lost.
Spooky.
Until there are people still at risk of redundancy and will remain so until everything is sorted. that kept me going through a lot of that time. And then in the last month or so, I thought, well, I don't have a theatre and arts programme anymore, so I will make something myself. So I have made the Suffolk Theatre website. And so it's almost like the show that I used to do, but in website form at the moment. And then I would like to make a podcast and turn it into a podcast as well. And it's theatre news and it's reviews and it's what's ons. And it's all the things I used to do in the 2-hour show and interviews and so forth. But as a website, a place where people can go to find out what's going on and what they'd maybe like to go and see and watch. And I just thought, well, I'm going to make it myself.
What's that website? It's Suffolk Theatre.
Suffolktheatre.co.uk.
And have you credited Joe Lycett? Have you been in touch with him to say, your badge inspired me and here it is?
I haven't, but I should. I should tweet him, actually, shouldn't I?
You definitely should. Forgive me for getting a slight lick on now because of me
trying to write the journey in.
No, that's not. That's my. It's a me problem. My son says it's a me issue. Not. I can't remember what he says, but it's my problem.
I told you I went on a bit. Musical theatre lyrics are another thing that inspire me. It's one of the few areas of theatre I haven't done because I, as one of my directors once said in pantomime, you can put a song across, Georgie. Not necessarily sing. You can put it across.
You can tell a story.
That's
a great metaphor. You can sell a story because that helps with your writing as well, obviously.
This is it. I can sell a song, but I'm not necessarily all that tuneful. But I adore musical theatre and I love going to watch it. And I find musical theatre, and I used to do a musical of the week just so I could get away with playing some show tunes, to be honest with you. It was lovely. And there's particularly Defying Gravity from Wicked. The lyrics, if I'm feeling low, I will ask a certain thing that's next to me. And if I say the word, it will set it off to play that. And I find the lyrics of Defying Gravity incredibly inspiring.
Lovely. And maybe we'll come on to that with quotes that you're coming on to in a moment.
Yes, possibly. Where is my quote? Okay.
So now we're on to your two random squirrels. What never fails to grab your attention, irrespective of anything else is going on for you? Oh, squirrels. You know, what's never failed to distract you?
It's funny you should mention that because one of a big pivotal moment in my life was when I was accepted on a Women in Broadcasting Day, which is what started me becoming a paid broadcaster. And I did an amazing session with a lady called Jane Kinghorn, who taught us about interviewing. And she told us to look out for squirrels. When you're interviewing people, they will say something and you might abandon the rest of your questioning and go with that squirrel. And
I love that.
And I've always held that because they might go, what makes you say that? And it takes the interview in a completely different area. Social media grabs my attention. It's a necessary evil.
Yes.
I think in the modern world, particularly if you have a brand or something to sell, but it's so distracting. It's so distracting. And when I'm writing an article or whatever I might be doing, I've got too many tabs open. And by that, I mean, I've got too many tabs open on my computer and in my head as well. But too many tabs open. And they invariably are LinkedIn and Instagram, Twitter.
Yes, too many tabs
open. Blue Sky now and all of them.
Too many tabs open in my brain is just so relatable. Absolutely. So that's the first squirrel. Thank you. Second squirrel.
smells. I've always been fascinated by aromatherapy, and I love intense and calming smells. I have candles around me. That one's, what's that? That's Seaside Woods. I've got loads of these things all around me. These sort of things you put on your pulse points. That one's called Mind Clear. That one's called De-Stress.
So you're an apothecary.
Yes. But they can be quite distracting as well, because they go, ooh, lavender, you know, and I'm off away.
Geordie's off on a waft. I like that.
I'm off on a waft, yeah.
By the way, sorry if I occasionally sound like I'm interrupting. The sound is occasionally snagging, and so
Sorry.
No, that's not your fault, but just that's occasionally if I'm interrupting, I apologise. It's not because I'm not good at trying to do that. Okay, now, what's a quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't possibly know until you tell us?
I was on the cover of a theatre programme for a theatre in Basingstoke. Around about 1993-94, I have a friend who's a photographer, and they actually did our wedding photographs, and he does a lot of theatre photography, and he needed someone to model for a theatre in Basingstoke that he was doing photography for, and it was there was an Agatha Christie, so it was just my hand with a load of blood and things. But then he did take a picture of me with a load of tickets fanned out, and that ended up on the front cover.
So it's
just random.
It's random. It's sort of Basingstoke's version of Vogue, which is the. I love that.
I'm not an actual model, so I thought it was just going to be like my hand or the back of my head. But then he did take that picture, and it's funny.
And I went to the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School, by the way, and often lots of actors, including people like Mark Strong, would have got their first job at Basingstoke Theatre. So it's...
Oh, well, there you go. They
great company.
Were in that season with me.
You should flick through
on the cover. Mark Strong's really. In there. Yeah.
Okay. We've shaken your tree, and now we're going to stay in the clearing, move away from the tree. Next, we talk about alchemy and gold. When you're at purpose and in flow, Georgie Jameson, what are you absolutely happiest doing in what you're here to reveal to the world?
I would say my purpose is to make people happy, to make them laugh and to entertain them. I think there is nothing nicer than hearing the sound of laughter. And that comes from years on the stage, and particularly doing a lot of comedy and hearing that woof of laughter when you've made an audience laugh is just. But also knowing that when I made people laugh on air, and you don't get that immediate reaction, but then people would text in and say, oh, I love your laugh, or you've just made me laugh. And one of the loveliest messages I ever got, so I used to do a regular feature on BBC Tees with a fabulous broadcaster and friend, Bob Fisher. And it was the most surreal thing. And someone messaged us once and said, we've just had to pull off the road because it's too much. I'm laughing so much, I don't drive anymore.
Oh, how lovely. And now I'm going to award you with a cake. And I've actually got a comedy cake somewhere.
I love cake.
Yes, cake. And you get to put a cherry on the cake. And this is stuff like, this is a dog's toy, I think, but it looks fantastic, doesn't it?
I love making cakes as well. I'm a great baker. I do like to. I can't decorate like they do on Bake Off. I just make the cake. I can't then make it look like the Taj Mahal or whatever it is they do.
That's
bonkers.
Well, they can on that. Okay, you get to put a cherry on the cake now. What's a favourite inspirational quote that's always given you succour and pulled you towards your future?
I have it here beside me because I've got a mood board. I've got one of those little cork boards, and it's logic will get you from A to B. Imagination will take you everywhere. Einstein. It's not that I'm not a logical person, but I just think imagination is the most powerful tool. And that's something that my son has taught me. He has an incredible imagination for stories and now for animation. And I just think imagination is the most creative thing we all have within us. And if you can imagine it, then you can do it.
Which links beautifully to the Joe Lycett badge as well, by the way. Those two are very much a duality.
Doesn't it? Yeah.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given, Georgie?
Well, that leads actually, what I was saying about if you can imagine it, you can do it. And that is The best piece of advice I've ever been given is this very powerful ethos. And it's only recently I was mentored by Stephanie Hurst, a broadcaster, on a program called RAMP, which was Radio Academy Mentor Program, which was utterly life-changing. And it's just simple. It's believe, achieve. And she does these incredible talks and presentations where she talks about her story. And it is believe, achieve. If you believe it, you can achieve it. And that is the best piece of advice. And I wouldn't have got through this redundancy without her, without RAMP and the mentor program.
And have you reached out to her again in the intervening period?
Yes. We talk quite regularly. And we're going to be working on this podcast, this Kenny Everett podcast with her and Hoggers. They'll be presenting it and I'll be producing it. And it's so powerful. It's so simple, but it's so powerful. And she'll say to me sometimes, just say it over and over again, believe, achieve. And then when you tie it, like say in with that Joe Lycett badge, okay, I can believe it, I can achieve it, but I'm going to have to make it myself. When you put them all together, you just, okay, yeah, I can do that.
It's also really profound for not needing to seek validation in others in order to be creative. And that's incredibly inspiring for anyone in the creative endeavor. Rather than waiting for someone to deign to give you permission to do something, it's better to just get on and do it.
That's it. Yeah. And it's like that old adage of if you just sit and wait for the phone to ring, it probably won't. You've got to go out and make the breaks yourself sometimes.
Control your own destiny, or others will control it for you.
Control your own destiny. Yeah, absolutely.
And now we're ramping up to a bit of Shakespeare, talk about legacy. Just before we get there, this is the pass the golden baton moment, please. So who in your network would you most like to pass the golden baton on to keep the golden storytelling thread alive?
Well, I've mentioned her several times. It is Stephanie Hurst, because she is incredible and a wonderful, wonderful broadcaster. And now inspirational speaker and presenter of her story. In these Believe Achieve talks as well, and a mentor, and she has an amazing story to tell.
And now, inspired by Shakespeare and all the world's steed and all the billy players, we'll talk about legacy, Georgie Jameson, and how, when all is said and done, you'd most like to be remembered.
The band was passed on to me by Hoggers, and his made me laugh so much because he just said, I don't care. Didn't want anyone to remember him at all. The most Hoggers thing ever. I would like to be remembered with a smile, as a kind and good friend. I would like people to, as a eulogy or at my funeral or later on, to suddenly something remind them and they smile and laugh and go, yeah, she was a good person. That's all you really want, I think, out of life, to people to remember you with kindness.
Boom. I love that. And I'm sure that legacy is already in the bag. And of course, it's a long way off. Obs. So where can we find out all about you on the old interweb?
I am talking about being distracted by social media. That is probably the best place to find me because I'm on there far too much. So I'm at Georgie Jameson on X, Twitter. I used to say on air when I wanted people to contact me, Georgie with a Y, Jameson with an IE. It was a bit of a catchphrase.
Georgie with a Y, Jameson with an IE.
And then there's this website, suffolktheatre.co.uk. And there is an email address on there to contact me as well. So
as this has been your moment in the sunshine of the Good Listening To show, Stories of Distinction and Genius, Georgie Jameson, is there anything else you'd like to say?
Yeah, I would like to say that I love the fact this is called the Good Listening To show, because I think listening has been a huge part of my life, right back from those days in retail where you listen. You have to listen to what the customer wants. And then right through to my favorite part of broadcasting, which was interviewing people. And the best interviewers listen. And I would always often an interviewee would say to me, well, did I talk too much? And I was like, It's your interview. You can't talk too much. This isn't about me. They haven't tuned in to hear me. They want to hear your story. So, and I always felt that. I think the interviewer should sometimes step back, because that is the art of a good interview, listening. And listen, if you listen to people in everyday life as well. What I was saying about being a good friend listens. They don't always offer advice. You don't always want advice. You just want someone to listen. And I think we should all listen more to each other.
Lovely. Georgie Jameson, thank you so much for being here in the Good Listening To Show. If you'd like to get in touch about being in the show yourself, look at www.thegoodlisteningtoshow.com. Tune in next time for more stories from the clearing. Anything else you want to say at this point?
Thank you very much for having me. It's been lovely.
You've been listening to The Good Listening To Show here on UK Health Radio with me, Chris Grimes. Oh, it's my son.
If you've enjoyed the show, then please do tune in next week to listen to more stories from the clearing.
If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, then please do so. There's also a dedicated Facebook group for the show too. You can contact me about the programme, or if you'd be interested in experiencing some personal impact coaching with me, care of my Level Up Your Impact programme, that's chris@secondcurve.uk. On Twitter and Instagram, it's
@thatchrisgrimes.
So until next time, for me, Chris Grimes, from UK Health Radio, and from Stan,
to your good health.
And goodbye.